Ruthie, and I have a recorder. Tune in Wednesdays from 4 to 5 to Out There. We'll meet people and plants around the streets and paths of Northampton, and we'll think about ways we can share the world, here on Valley Free Radio, or archived online at weatherbeer.com/out there. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in! We don't care if they laugh at us. Let us take the bus and leave the sickle for us. They can have the Cadillac and T-1-2, but give me my rocket bicycle for two. Oh, on that promo I said I had a recorder, but actually we have live guests in the studio today. Today is Wednesday, April 12th, I believe, 2017. And in the studio, we have Dwayne Rainey, who you may have heard before.
Dwayne Rainey in the studio.
Host of My Generation Fridays.
An executive producer.
From 2 to 4.
Only producer, but that's what makes me executive.
And we also have Mike Friedman. Thanks for coming in, Mike.
Glad to be here.
Mike is a... Well, I roped him into coming in today because he's staying at our house and I'm feeling a little sick. And I was like, hey, anyone want to help me with my radio show today? And Mike said, I could play some music. And I'm sure he can tell some stories, too. Mike is a musician visiting from New York City. He's been playing music there since 2003. And he's visiting with his wife, Sarah Katz, and son, Meyer. Anything else? Any more labels you want for yourself, Mike?
We'll let them come out. They'll be put on me.
Okay. So
radical.
So all four chairs in the studio, all four chairs and all four mics in the studio are taken today. One by me, one by Dwayne, one by Mike, and one by Mike's amplifier.
The amplifier. Say hello.
Mike's.
It can. It's going to do more of that, I'm sure.
One of the things that Mike was interested in talking about today was creativity as a form of resistance. We'll get to that. Anything off the top of your head that you want to say about that, Mike?
Well, I think we'll get to that because sometimes you need to show people where you're coming from before you start talking about what it is.
Yeah, so you've got a steel guitar?
I have a 8-string lap steel, and for those out there who don't know what that is, I don't blame you. It's not the most common instrument. It's a variant of the guitar. It's in the guitar family, and it's the one I'm playing. It's an aluminum instrument with the strings about an inch off of the body of the neck. There's no frets, and instead of fretting with my fingers, I'm using a steel bar that looks, it's called a bullet bar because it looks like a giant bullet. And it's commonly heard in the country and Western genre as well as Hawaiian music, so you might be familiar with hearing sounds like
aloha.
How are you making that sound, Mike, for people who can't look over and see you?
So that's my steel bar sliding on the strings. I'm for the technically inclined. I'm playing a chord, and I'm sliding my bar to change it. I mean, that's a lot of what goes on. But I've made a career for myself not playing that way. I make a strong effort to find other avenues, other sounds for the lap steel, and it's a rare day that you see me on a country and Western gig, and I've yet to play a Hawaiian music
so
performance.
No luau's in the future?
Future maybe, past no.
So what kind of music or gigs are you likely to play?
Well, living in New York City, it's a pretty diverse place, so I like to think of myself as the cream on top, where, you know, there'll be a group that's doing something that's quite spectacular and they want to add a little something unusual or something to take it a little further. So such groups, you know, I play in some religious music. I play in a Jewish kind of vocal ensemble. It's about 6 or 7 vocalists in a rhythm section. And then with lap steel, I play in a Turkish-American kind of fusion group that plays a lot of traditional Turkish rhythms. But then we try to fuse it with Americana. I play in jazz ensembles, rock bands, and I also improvise, which is what I'll be doing today, is just let the sounds come, kind of explore, look for the center of something, try to find it, get lost while you're doing it.
I know all about getting lost while you're doing it.
Didn't you?
Yeah, doing it, but I know about getting lost while I'm in the process of something.
Can I say this on air, Mike? Didn't you play like with an Elvis impersonator for a while?
I did play with an Elvis impersonator for a while. It didn't work out as you would hope, as I had hoped. Yeah. But
you got all shook up?
I got all shook up.
Well, is there anything that you want to play right now to start us off?
Yeah, well, if it's ready, maybe we could play. I have a new record coming out with my band.
Yeah, tell us about it.
So my band is called Mike Friedman and the Mike Friedmans. And
how many of you are there?
There's six of us. It's actually funny. My son, who's almost four, told me he has a band called Meyer and the Myers. So it's spreading. It's an intergenerational movement. And this is a group of brilliant New York improvisers. These are guys you can see playing Balkan music, playing rock music, playing theater shows, playing pretty much all over the spectrum. And I was lucky enough to grab them for my ensemble. And maybe we'll hear a track and I could talk a little bit more about it after. Let's go with track two. It's called Clock Watchers.
Okay.
Oh, I have to give you the CD and...
Yeah, I got to put the CD in.
Okay.
And...
You still all shook up?
It's going to take me a minute to figure out how the CD player plays, because this is usually a talk show and I'm not too experienced in playing these things. But there was some...
Would you like help?
Tell it, you've played at my house on Saturday.
Yes, I'm playing a concert this Saturday in a trio with... I can give your address on the air?
Yep.
All right. 8 High Street in Florence, 7 p.m. It'll be we'll be playing in trio, Chris Fransdale on the bass, Jacob Last on keyboard or piano, and I'll be playing the lap steel. We're going to be playing some tunes and some improvised music. And what can you say? I met Chris at a New Year's party a couple years ago, and we were just talking, introducing ourselves, and he told me that he had just left a Buddhist monastery where he'd been living for, I think, 8 years as a monk. And I said, wow, you know, I really fantasize about becoming a monk. In all earnestness, because I have a long standing yoga and meditation practice, and I often, when life gets a little hairy, I think, how beautiful would it be to just go live in a monastery and meditate all day and not have to focus on other things? And he said, well, it might not be as all you think it is. You know, it might not be as great as you think it is. And I go, okay, well, what are you doing now that you left the monastery? And he said, I'm kind of planning on moving to Brooklyn to play creative music and experimental music. And I started laughing and I said, well, might not be all you think it is.
That's funny. All right, track two.
Here we go, Clock Watchers. Thank you.
right, that was Clock Watcher
debut
by Mike Friedman and the Mike Friedmans.
And the Mike Friedmans. That was the intergalactic premiere of that performance, the recording, because the record is not officially out yet, so mm-hmm. It hasn't been played on the airwaves.
Great. Intergalactic and out there. this is great.
Out there on Valley Free Radio. That's the name of the show.
You got it.
And Mike Friedman of the Mike Friedman, the Mike Friedmans is here in the studio live.
Yeah.
That song, piece, what do you call it? Song?
I would call it a tune.
Tune was off of your first U.S. album.
It's my first, yeah, I'm Canadian, and I've put out, I've put 5 records as a leader of a Canadian group, but this is my first record as a leader of an American band, although I've been leading groups in New York since 2003. I got this great opportunity this year to finally put out a record, and the way we made this was kind of unusual for New York, because often, you know, New York, like many places, people are very, very busy, so keeping them close to you, getting to play often or regularly, can be very challenging. And we had this wonderful opportunity where we played every week for about 4 or 5 months, and then after that we went into the studio and we just played all day, and we took our favorite takes without editing, because usually if you do a recording, you might do, you know, 2 or 3 rehearsals if you're lucky, a gig, maybe 2 gigs, and then you go and record, and then often a fair amount of editing might happen to get the takes, the best parts of the best takes, where back in the old days, bands would just go in and record. Yeah. And that was what we were seeking to recreate. And it's a lot more fun that way, because the chemistry is happening in the moment. You can watch people coming up with great ideas on the fly, and everyone's so connected because you're so used to playing with these people that everyone moves together. You know, you can hear something for a millisecond of something and you go, I know what he's thinking because I know that musician, I can follow. So that was what we were attempting to do.
So how is it playing just by yourself, or just you and your lap steel?
It's a different thing, especially the lap steel is kind of a tricky instrument to play solo. It's very rare to see a lap steel player playing solo. It's usually an ensemble instrument, because you can't cover that much territory, because you're playing with a steel bar. It's like playing guitar with one finger.
Uh-huh. You know, I can do that.
You can do it, and I would not discourage anyone from trying, but it's difficult to cover the harmony and the melody and all the different
points.
You're
not going to do it on my show, Dwayne Rainey. Do it on your own show.
Yeah. I wouldn't discourage anyone from trying anything on the guitar. So we'll just be upfront about that. But it's just a challenging instrument sonically. So when I improvise, I try to just think of it a little bit in a meditative approach of like starting somewhere and just letting things unfold, following it, trying to be open to, you know, if you make a mistake, saying, well, great, let's go with it. Let's go with that sound. Let's go with that into that territory. And see what happens. And it's something I've been doing more. And over the last, I would say, 6 months, actually, I was in the Hudson Valley this summer, and there's a great spot called the Rail Trail Cafe. And it's a pizza place in the middle of the woods. Uh-huh. And because of their licensing, they're not a restaurant. They can't have a restaurant license. So they're an event space. So they have to have an event to stay open. Otherwise, they have to jump through some legal hoops. So they need to have something happening all the time. So there's music there. Every time they're open, there's music happening.
And free pizza.
No free lunch. So, but there's constantly music. So I thought, oh, this would be a great place, a great low-pressure environment to explore playing the lap steel solo. And I was reading this beautiful book called The Myth of Human Superiority, I think, by Derek Jensen. Maybe your regular listeners are followers of Derek Jensen. I don't know. He's a deep ecology philosopher, and he was speaking about the deep consciousness of animals and plants and all the other species on our planet, and he was giving lots of evidence for the amazing things that all of these sentient beings are doing. And I was really moved by it, and I went to this gig, and I said, I'm just really going to be open today to this space. I'm sitting on a wooden plank. I'm surrounded by trees. I can hear cicadas. I can hear birds flying around. I'm going to play, and I'm going to be open to the sounds around me, and we'll see what happens. So I start improvising, and within a couple minutes, I start hearing like the worst keyboard music you could imagine. It was like devoid of any sense. There was no rhythm. There was no tonality. There was no dynamics. It was just like someone was like randomly hitting their keyboard, and it wouldn't stop.
And it wasn't me.
It wasn't you. No, I know it wasn't you. And what happened was, finally someone said, I'm going to go see what's going on, because this is, like, it was making everyone kind of crazy. So someone walked up this hill to see, you know, where the music was coming from. And it turned out someone had connected a plant to a synthesizer, and then the electrical impulses coming from the plant were triggering the synthesizer. So it actually was, like, it was exactly what I set out to do, like, be open and play with nature. And the nature met me more than halfway. I plugged into an amplifier, and it cranked out, and it started playing along with me. And I to this day, I'm still confused as to, you know, my reaction of being annoyed at this situation that I specifically put out. I wanted to have happen. So I don't know if there's a moral to this story when you set out sonic intention.
Did the plant get better as you started playing?
I don't know. It's hard to judge a plant's musical abilities.
That reminds me of something that's like apropos of nothing, except for it has to do with plants and animals, that I read last week about ants, that some ants are like dairy farmers where they
milk. Aphids.
Milk the aphids, and they stroke the aphids with their antenna, and the aphids secrete this milky substance that they eat.
That's what I'm talking about.
They're called ant cows.
It's beautiful.
Do you want to play a song, or do you want to talk some more about? I can ask you more questions if you want to talk some more. If you're itching to play a song, you can play a song.
Maybe I'll improvise a little bit, and then I'll unload my manifesto.
All right.
For those tuning in right now, I'll give a very short introduction to what I'm about to do. I'm sitting here. I'm going to play my 8-string lap steel, which is a seated slide guitar. And I'm going to, as they say, let the spirit move me. So I'll just improvise for a while, and we'll see what happens. And this will be some non-idiomatic lap steel music, which is a little bit of what I've dedicated my life to in part. Thank you.
Mike. That was Mike Friedman playing steel guitar here in the studios of Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton. The show is Out There. I'm Ruthie Woodring, joined here by, like I said, Mike Friedman and also Dwayne Rainey.
That sounded like something from Martian Gardens. They have, what is up on the board?
Yes, another show here on Valley Free Radio.
Electric. What's the exact description?
I'm looking for it.
It's on Friday, just before my show.
Oh, I don't see it. But you can keep describing it, Dwayne.
Yeah, they have all different kinds of, like, it's not even just playing whatever they want to play. Sometimes they come in, it's like a whale sounds. I'm like, okay, great. But just, I never know what I'm going to hear on that show.
Oh, yeah, here it says Martian Gardens, classical, experimental, and electronic, Fridays from noon to 2.
Experimental. Experimenting.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, so Mike, I want to get some more stories out of you. You have a Black Lives Matter sweatshirt on, and you came excitedly into the house this afternoon with a Black Lives Matter bumper sticker. Where did you get that?
I got it at the bookstore next to the Green Bean.
At Broadside Books?
Yes.
So...
It was right in between Yes Farms, Yes Food, and No Farms, No Food.
That's funny. I got one there recently that said... It had a picture of a calendar and the days of the week, like the, you know, the letters of the days of the week, and it said... After Monday and Tuesday, even the calendar says WTF. I know last time you visited from Brooklyn, I think it was pretty recently after the election, the presidential election maybe, or the inauguration, yeah. I don't remember. And you had some stories of friends and neighbors that were living with a lot of fear. And yeah, how are things with your friends and
hard to say. You know? I mean, I think like in many places throughout the country, right after the election was a really confusing and scary time. And I take my son for a walk most days in the afternoon, usually between an hour, sometimes two and a half hours. And I walk the same streets, so I see a lot of the same people, and I really get a sense of kind of the energy on the street just from seeing it day in and day out. And the days following the election were quite different. You know, the day after, I remember no one was making eye contact. No one would look at me. Everyone was just looking straight ahead, which is contrary. You know, I don't, you know, New York has this persona of being a cold place, but it's not. People are very, very warm, and they're very, you know, if you say hello, most people say hello back, and it's a very friendly place. It's only if it looks like you want money, then no one wants to look at you. But if you're, you know, if it's clear you're just being friendly, people are quite friendly. And in the days following the election, everyone, it just seemed they were closing in on themselves. And then I remember the next day walking the streets and just seeing people crying. And I went into a coffee shop and I ran into an acquaintance, and he was with a friend, and we started talking, and his friend, there's a guy about my age, he just started crying right in the coffee shop, and we all had a little moment of this is intense, who knows what's coming next, we shall see. Another experience that was unusual, I went to the dentist, and the week after the election.
Was he angry?
My dentist is always happy.
Okay, you don't want an angry dentist. I don't care.
He's always in a good mood. But the hygienist was a Muslim woman wearing a hijab, and she was so friendly, and so she seemed so happy. And I'm sitting in the chair, and I was kind of, you know, you have a long time to think while they're cleaning your teeth. And I was thinking, here I am, like a total emotional wreck about what's going on, feeling terrified, feeling upset, angry. And here's a person who is going to face a lot, like her struggles will be way greater than mine, just because of the nature of who she is as a woman and as a Muslim in America. You know, those are two categories that are harder to deal with than being, you know, a young white man. And I thought, well, she seems so fine. Like maybe somehow I've lost myself in this, and I'm making it about something else, and my reaction is disproportionate. I don't know. This is what I'm thinking while I'm having my teeth tortured. And then when I was done, the woman said to me, did you go to a protest today? And I kind of got nervous because I'm not a citizen. I'm Canadian. I'm on a green card. And I've been told many, many times by people in the know that I should not go to protests because the risk of arrest is too great. You know, I don't have the same rights as a citizen. And if I get arrested, it could really mess up my status and that I should involve myself in other ways. So I said, why do you think I went to a protest? Like, I got kind of scared. And she said, well, your bike basket says not my president. And I said, oh, yeah, that. And I was like, well, I'm kind of like always, I'm a walking protest, but I don't go to protests. And she was like, oh, okay. But when she said that, it was a little bit of like an icebreaker into talking not just about my teeth. And I said, how are you and your family doing? And then everything changed. And she started to cry. And she wasn't hysterical, but her eyes got teary and her voice changed. And she said, thank you for asking. We're doing okay. We live in a diverse neighborhood. You know, our community is our community, but I definitely, when I go on the street now, I'm scared and I have to be careful. And it feels like a new reality. And then I went, okay, this, you know, I'm not blowing things out of proportion. Things have changed as much as it feels they have, and we're living in scary times for many people, and I don't know, answers will come in time. We will see how things progress. We will see what we can do that will be successful, what we will do that bring some light, some positivity to our circumstances, which can seem quite dire. And that was part of what I wanted to talk a little bit about while coming on the show, was using creativity as a form of resistance in and of itself. And I see a lot of people in the communities that I exist in where people are saying, what can we do? And not that they're doing nothing. I mean, people are doing lots and lots and lots of things, but there's a question, what's successful? What's, you know, everyone has limited resources of time or money or whatever it is that we need to expend. There's limits, you know, because we all, that's just a reality. So the question is, what are we going to do that's going to make the most impact? And I see a lot of people feeling a little lost about that. And one thing that I think about is that of these people, and of most people, they're very creative. They have outlets that they're already plugged into that they don't identify as political. But I truly believe that to get out there in the world and do what it is you do and do it in a very personal way is in it of itself political. So to get out there and make your art, or get out there and be a writer, or get out there and be a parent who parents in a unique way, or what, you know, you can fill in the blank of what mode. But basically, anytime you take the time to let your true self shine out, you are fighting the tyranny that is all around us, because you are showing a way of nonconformity. And conformity is what enables a lot of the horrors that we're afraid of. And when people say, I'm not going to let that happen because I see another way, or I'm not going to be part of that, that chips away at the strength of the mob mentality, or the mob of the government, or the mob of the Senate, or the House, or whatever wherever power is consolidated. And I also think that when people take time to do something that's very powerfully unique, it sends a strong message to everyone else who has their own way of being that it's okay to do it. It's okay to drive forward in your own way, even though you don't see other people doing it in that way. And I think that's so important, especially now where it feels like the pressure to commodify and conform are so great. You know, I'm in the music world in New York City, and I exist as a professional musician, and I see the push to do things a certain way, to make music a certain way, present it in a certain way, you know, exist electronically in a certain way. And it's stifling to individuality. It's stifling to creativity. What does it serve? It serves industry. It serves capitalism. It serves commodification of people and of art. So whenever someone doesn't follow that, they're basically saying, this is okay, you can do it. And I know for myself, I've seen people stepping out on their own in beautiful and odd and charming and brilliant ways. And I think, man, look at that person doing that. That's so powerful. And even if what they're doing has nothing to do with what I'm doing, it makes me think, I want to go home and double down on my own efforts, because it's when you see it, it just really shines a light to the power of individuality in a personal way. It's not just about defying, but it's about people saying, you know, how do you want to make music? How do you want to create art? How do you want to exist in your community? And or even, you know, can extend, how do you want to identify yourself as yourself? What is your identity? You can really create that. And when you see someone do it in a bold and strong way, it's validating, I think, to that beauty existing elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. As a musician who's trying to make a living with your music, I mean, how does that affect your ability to make a living? Whether, you know, how much you conform or how much you let your individuality shine?
I think it has a huge impact, sadly. And there are people who transcend, but oftentimes you see, to get to the higher echelons of success, it takes a certain type of conformity, and it may manifest in many different ways. It may be, you know, a common way that I see it happening that is not apparent to people not involved in the music scene is that for someone to become successful, they have to become essentially a product, something that's very easy to define, something very clear to market. And the problem with that is it means you have to become something that doesn't really change, because once people latch on to what it is you're doing, they don't want the next thing you're doing to be radically different, unless your thing is that you are always doing something radically different. Mm-hmm. And then you're locked into that cycle of you have to do something radically different. But even, you know, you can see someone doing the most adventurous out there music, and then you realize the way that they play that adventurous music can't shift beyond certain parameters, because there are expectations of them that is beyond them being themselves. It's them delivering on the expectations they've created. And so there are artists who say, well, I'm not interested in that. I'm going to make a singer-songwriter, like a record of songs. I'm going to make a record of string music. I'm going to make a record of noise. I'm going to do all these different things. And then it's hard for them to push their career because they're all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, people say, oh, they're all over. I can't do anything with this. But I guess essentially I'm saying there's a beauty in that is more valuable.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Mike Friedman, a friend of mine, he's a musician, well, obviously. It's who you've been hearing talk. I'm Ruthie Woodring. Dwayne Rainey's also in the studio here with me on Valley Free Radio. Dwayne, you look like you got something trying to come out of your mouth.
I can stretch, can't I? Oh, yeah. Fridays 2 to 4, my generation, 70s rock. Don't forget to tune in.
Thank you.
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones como arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue,
11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta. Ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit. Ask your parents to take you to where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Aaron, do you have an easy essay? This is like one of my favorite easy essay by Peter Morin.
Yes.
The world would be better off if everyone tried to become better, and people would become better if they stopped trying to be better off. For when everyone tries to become better off, nobody is better off. But when everyone tries to be better, everyone is better off. Peter Morin.
Yes.
Join me, Dwayne Rennie, every Friday from 2 to 4. We rock down memory lane with music from the 70s. Only here on Valley Free Radio.
So I actually had a little recording, a little interview with Francis Crowe from, it was a week and a half ago, so there might be something untimely, and we were talking about vortex resistance a little bit.
We're having a strike for no war. We want to come together and on Patriots Day walk from the Bridge Street School down to Pulaski Park, where we will have music and speak out. No big people speaking, but the people speaking about their vision for a new society where we don't pay for war.
So this is on Patriots Day. What is the date?
The 16th of April.
Okay, and that's
at 11 o'clock in the morning, meet at the Bridge Street School and walk down to Pulaski Park.
So this is around the time that most people are finishing up their income taxes. Do you want to say anything about not paying income taxes or war tax resistance?
Exactly. Consider not paying for war. To say no. But redirect your money into something useful or to the victims, like paying for care of children in the Baghdad hospital for cancer, or children with cancer from our leftover munitions.
A lot of people wonder, well, you can't just not pay taxes, can you?
Why not? You file and write a letter saying my conscience will not permit me to pay for war. And you can't separate what your money will go for the government, so you don't pay. And you redirect your money, and then you instead say that you're paying for children, victims of the war at the cancer hospital in Baghdad. And you put your money where they can't easily come and get it, like in a trust fund. And otherwise, you know, if it's in the bank, they might come and get it, although they take it out of my Social Security every month. They take only 15%. That's what they're allowed to take, no more.
Would you say that you have prevented them from getting much more than 15% over the years?
I think so, yes. But I spend the money You know, it's not that I use it for personal gain, but I send it to people who are victims, who really need it. And so we're going to be walking, and it's interesting. There was a letter to the editor, maybe you saw in the newspaper, where someone had accused me of being outrageous because I had said, you know, at a city council meeting 2 years ago, that our government was always bombing. Uh-huh. And when you really look at the rates, that's true. They really are. They spend, you know, wherever. They go to war, they bomb. And as we bombed in Vietnam, on both sides, South Vietnam and North Vietnam, and now they're bombing all over, and you see the tragic consequences of that in Syria and Yemen and other places. You know, we don't suffer as much. People don't go to war fight, you know, front to front, but they fly these big, powerful planes and drop the bombs.
And that was a brief interview with Frances Crowe from a week or two ago. Patriots Day is April 17th, and March. There's going to be a march downtown. Look it up online, because I forgot the details.
Just go downtown.
Yeah, go downtown. I think it's this Bridge Street School.
It's swept up. You'll see some part of it.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Democracy Now! Comes up at 5 o'clock. I'm live in the studio with Mike Friedman, a musician friend, and Dwayne Rainey, a friend.
Yeah, come on, not quick like wit, Dwayne. Magician. I'm just a friend.
We're going to hear another song from...
And executive producer of my generation.
Yeah, I played your promo when you were out of the studio. You know what else I wanted to announce coming up? May 1st is May Day, and there's going to be lots of people striking. The Service Employees International Union is going to be striking, many of them. It's also being hailed as a day without immigrants, where many undocumented people will be striking. Businesses are encouraged to close in solidarity with their workers or with people who are undocumented.
How is the chump going to get anything done in Mar-a-Lago that weekend? Seriously. No clean silverware? What's this world coming to?
I saw some sign, which it was kind of clever, but I can't really remember what it said. Something about Trump and his wives and immigrants doing all the work, all the dirty work. Cosecha, movimientocosecha.com, that's like a grassroots, horizontal, structured organization, movement that's doing a lot of work towards this strike. You can go to their website for more information. They're building towards a week-long strike, and they're a nonviolent movement fighting for permanent protection, dignity, and respect for the 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country. And why strike? They say, we've tried the usual tactics. For years, our community has marched, voted, and gone through the courts. It's because striking reveals our true power. It'll show the public that this country can't function without us and help us with protection, dignity, and respect. And May 1st is just the beginning, or
so
a continuation.
It's gonna be for a week.
Well, May 1st is like a one-day strike, but it's sort of building the movement and the awareness towards a week-long strike, and that week-long strike isn't scheduled.
How are they going to get any clean sheets in Mar-a-Lago?
It's gonna be rough, huh? Maybe... it'll be educational. I don't know. Maybe some government policies will change. So, Mike, anything you want to say We're going to introduce the next song or anything else you want to say?
We're going to listen to a song called Grand Opening at Ting. Ting was a beautiful and wonderful after-hours club in Toronto that used to open at midnight and go till 5 a.m. And I just want to credit the brilliant musicians who play on this track. It's Patrick Briner on reeds, Carlo Costa on drums, Adam Hopkins on the bass, Jason Vance on the banjo, Kenny Warren on the trumpet, and yours truly on lap steel.
Mike Friedman and the Mike Friedmans. Thanks for coming in, Mike.